Two guests have a guest on our show to talk about domestic violence and the awareness of it. We have two authors who will be here. On the 4th, we will have Bethany Real. She's the author of a book on trafficking, and we're going to talk about that. And then the next week after that, it will be Ray Ellis. As usual, Ray Ellis is no stranger to our show. And Ray will be back to talk about relationships and violence in relationships. So make sure you tune in for that. Then we'll have an attorney to talk about that, and so on and so forth. So let us know how, give us some feedback. We'll keep you appraised of all of that. These shows will take place Friday mornings at 10 a.m. So make sure everybody can tune in and so on and so forth. And then, of course, during Domestic Violence Awareness Month, we are also going to talk about how do we go about doing the things that we do, and so on. So we'll see how those work, and so on and so forth. Well, for right now, we're going to take a break. And when we return, we are going to talk some more about these issues, racism versus colorism. And if you want to, you can call into us at 646-378-0578. And I'm going to give a shout-out to my good friend, Tori Lee, who is about to start off on a new venture. So why don't I play one of her songs and so on. All right. Well, right now, we're checking the news, and it says here, oh boy, that a bus and a passenger train collided in Ottawa, Ontario, resulting in multiple casualties. You know, those are our friends to the north, and we really feel for them. So prayers to everybody. We hope everyone is safe, and we certainly are looking forward to hearing good reports coming out of that. But right now, in the meantime, we're going to hear a word from our sponsor, and then we're going to play a song by my good friend, Tori Lee. Look out for her, right? Yep, my girl Tori Lee. She's going to sing for us Airplane Ride. Wow. Here we go. Have a good day. We'll be right back.
The whispers follow Marvin Gaye in my headphones till the music starts to fade away. I give away my brown sugar for a bit of pop. If love really was a bullet, I'd have took the shot. Now would you buy me a drink just to take me home? Put your game in a song just to make make me moan. I like my Robin Thicke, me alone. A thug album, triple shots, that's a trait.
I get lost in your words. It feels so good when I'm hurt. Take my mind off of the pain. Love when the beat takes me away. It's only good music.
Airplane ride, and what a morning it is for us to be sharing the news. And we are talking about the bus and the train that collided on Level Crossing in Ontario. And it is something to behold. Oh my goodness. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll continue with more of this. In the meantime, why don't you hear a word from our sponsor? This is the Harriet Kemp Show.
Why not try Organo Gold? It's mixed with the ancient Chinese herb Ganoderma that allows you to heal your body while also enjoying your cup of John. Organo Gold even comes in different flavors like latte, mocha, chocolate, not to mention green tea. Go to our website at www.harrietkamak.organogold.com and place your order today. Have you ever read one of Harriet's books, Visions, Musings of the Spirit, or Through the Fire? If you haven't, don't fret. They're all available on Harriet's website at www.harrietkamak.org. They're also available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. You can even download Harriet's app on your web-enabled mobile device. Simply type in http://harrietkamak.mob.app.at in your mobile phone's web browser. Need Harriet to speak at your next engagement? Give her a call at 1-800-573-1534 or visit the Contact Us page on her website. And if you want to know more about the Harriet Kamak Show, log into Facebook and search for The Harriet Kamak Show. Like the page if you want to, and be blessed.
You go to HarrietKamak.org, as well as liking our page on Facebook, on Facebook.com/TheHarrietKamak Show, and make sure you stay tuned to us. So we are sending our prayers and support out to our friends in Ottawa, Ontario, at the scene of that bus crash, where unfortunately a double-decker bus crashed into a train at a level crossing in Ontario. This just happened just a few minutes ago. The police are on the scene. So far they have been 5 casualties, but they're expecting more as the entire front part of the bus just totally is gone. And just looking at the photograph, it is unbelievable what has happened. Emergency crews are on site, and it is amazing what is going on. It's amazing what is going on right there right now. So we are absolutely in prayer for everyone. It's a very serious scene. Obviously they're trying to get anyone with serious injuries to the hospital and getting them into proper care. And apparently the bus runs between Montreal and Toronto, and it just happened at 8:48 a.m. Eastern time. So that was just a little over an hour ago, and at 8:48 Eastern time. I was on the phone with my loving daughter feeling like, oh boy. So for those of you who are just joining us, this is where we are. It's another day in North America. It's just another day, and dear God, help us as we look at the scene of what happened at this bus. It is unbelievable. It is totally unbelievable. Please, we are asking for prayers for any passengers who are on that bus and for the people who are working there. And my God, prayers for the families, prayers for the families. I can't say it enough. Wow. It's prayer time, everybody. If you ever thought there was a time to pray, this is it. It is indeed time to pray. It is indeed time to pray. I posted a link on Facebook and on Twitter, so make sure you go in and join it and make sure that you are seeing it as this unfolds. I know many of you are saying, well, what does that have to do with us? Well, it is part of it, you know, it is Canada. And whatever happens, people are people no matter where you live over anywhere in the world. And I'm going to be honest with you, I have a lot of friends in Canada. A lot of people whom I went to high school with live in Canada, so my prayers are obviously going to be with them also. So, we're praying for them also. So we're praying for that. We're praying for that. It's prayer time. It's prayer time. That's all I can say. It's prayer time. It's prayer time, everybody. It's prayer time. It is prayer. Prayer. Oh boy. I know, it just kind of took my breath away, even though my producer is sweating. All right, let's keep the show moving. So, today we're talking about racism and colorism. And you are with a live show, hence you're hearing all my idiosyncrasies and so on. So, don't go judging me. But we're talking about racism and colorism, and I want to put this into perspective for you. Whenever you hear me come and talk about subjects like these and matters like these, it's because, one, it's an observation based on an incident I have seen or an observation based over time. Typically, it's over time that I assess a situation and arrive at a perspective, or it's something that I have experienced. So it's from two ideologies, two sets of schools of thought that I derive these conversations from. When I talk about racism and colorism now, it's going to be from observation and experience, because I've experienced it now. I can now say that I have. And so we're going to talk about it, and I'm going to say it because I want you not just to be aware, but I want you to be educated as to what the difference is between the two. And not only do I want you to know what the difference is, but I also want you to understand the motivation. And when you are educated about what the differences are, you'll be able to identify them, and you'll be able to adjust or modify or deal with it, such as I had to do yesterday. Now, without calling any names or so on, and they're welcome to provide me with their feedback, at this point, I don't care. I really don't. At this point, we perhaps need to man up, everybody. But I'm part of a group of people who are putting together a conference. And it's been almost 2 years, so you get to know people, which is scary. You get to know how people think. I must admit right now, starting off, that I was not born in the United States. Okay, so racism and colorism are new experiences for me. I had never experienced racism. I didn't know what it feels like. I still, you know, so my response is today, if someone is being racist, are usually very, I don't know. I don't recognize it because I wasn't trained to, because I didn't grow up in an environment where racism was prevalent. So it might seem to the persons who are perpetrating it and the people around, it might seem that I'm a little slow in responding to it just because I don't have any experience with it. I just don't know it. So it took me a while to understand that the person was trying to impose a barrier that before did not exist for me. In my mindset, does not exist. So I'm part of a group of people, and I found myself on a committee with comprised mostly of women and maybe two men now. And they are older. They're older than I am. They're in the next age group above me. They're 55 plus people. I would say that they're old. Many of them are over 50. They are definitely over 50. And they are white, middle class, upper middle class women of a certain generation. Many of them are headed to be our baby boomers who will be retiring, who should be facing retirement very soon, or who are not many years outside of retirement. And initially when I was asked to join, I was asked to join by a peer whom she and I had collaborated on other projects in the past. She too is also white, middle class, but we are the same age group. I'm painting this picture so you understand. And when we sat on the committee, my job then, I am a people person, so I observe people. So rather than jump in with my ideas, what I did was I sat back and observed. I never contributed to the conversation. I was just a presence there. So initially, to get to know one another, we obviously had to introduce ourselves and where we come from. And I was introduced as a faith-based partner. And because I was introduced as a faith-based partner, immediately they just put me in the category of, okay, she's black, so she brings faith. I think that's what they thought, which amused me no end. Well, as time evolved, they became, I remember one day as I was walking out, they had a discussion, and after about a year and a half of sitting there, I got tired of the conversation they were having, because their conversations tended to be very blind-sided, very exclusive. They're planning a conference on violence prevention, but they were not taking into consideration that there were other people who lived in the county except for themselves. So the conference was is really going to mirror their own beliefs and perceptions about what they think people should think or do, but really does not is not going to be significant because it won't address the real issues of the time. So they're blinded, they're insulated. It's like, almost as if they live in an igloo. So finally I spoke up and said something, and you know, everybody just went kind of crazy. So one of them turned to look at me, and I told them who I was and described myself. And the room went suddenly silent, because suddenly now I am somebody. Suddenly now, what are you going to do with this person who seems to be as eminently or is preeminent and is more qualified than you are? You're just a bureaucrat. This person is a community member and who is validated by the community and can't speak to the subject. That's when the colorism crept out. Because now, in order to sideline you and to reduce your effectiveness, they have to point out their own beliefs about who you should be and what you should do based on how they think you should be and what you look like. So now they want to push you over here into another category. And so I began to observe the dynamics. And you know how hairy it is. The worst thing you can do is push me away from something that I believe is mine. I become as tenacious as a bulldog. I will literally rip everything to shreds to get what I want. And so I became a mute. And so as the conversation evolved, and it evolved, and over time the conversations began to become more meaningful, I finally said, if you really don't know who I am, you should go to the internet to look up who I am. Why don't you go and do perform a Google search, and then you'll find out who I am. And I began to tell them about the genesis of writing my books and so on. And so people became flabbergasted. So yesterday when we were sitting there, for the first time, it became apparent to me that colorism was saying, I said, this is not race. This is colorism. They're marginalizing people based on the color of their skin and pushing them into a category. And then they recognize that the category I want to push her into, she doesn't fit into that. So they're still struggling to find whatever methods and means they can to sideline, and she just isn't moving. So they're planning a conference, and they had some kind of language. Language matters. How you speak to people, the words you use to people, can be very effective, can be very meaningful, can be very demeaning. And so I began to look at the language they were using on paper to speak about this conference, and I didn't like it. And I mean, I just looked at it and said, I don't like it. I said, perhaps we need to change that. And they said, what do you suggest we do? And I told them what I suggested. They listened, and I looked at one of them, and I said, perhaps what we need to do is to be a lot less exclusive and be more inclusive. I said, in today's day and age, it's not a good thing. It's not good form for us to exclude others. This conference appears to be too marginalizing and polarizing. And because of that, it's not inclusive at all. I said, the people who are coming to the conference are not going to move into your neighborhood. They're not going to move into your house. As a matter of fact, you can arrange for the police to escort them back out of town when the conference is over. But we need to be a little bit more inclusive than exclusive and not be so marginalized. And you could have heard a ticking bomb went off. I mean, you could hear every tick of everybody's watch. It was that silent. And so I have to say that because I was looking at it, and suddenly I didn't want to be a part of it. I did not want to be a part of it. I felt as if it does not represent who I am. It does not represent what I do. What the conference initially was designed to do was one thing. What it is now turning out to do has been twisted and metamorphosed into something else. And I'm not happy with it at all. I'm really not happy with it. And so I didn't want to be a part of it. I looked at it, and I did not want to be a part of it anymore. I felt like it was misrepresenting what I believe and what I hope to achieve. And I'm not sure if there's some way to kind of corral it and bring it back. And so one of the things that, as I looked at it, I said it's time for us to talk about what is colorism and what is racism, to help others to define, because clearly the women there have been practicing racism and colorism, and woe is to me, because I just couldn't recognize it, because to me, a person is a person is a person. If you're a human being, you're a person. I don't care if you're white, black, red, green, or yellow. You've got to understand that I grew up in a society where being white was not considered to be the epitome of being a human being. That being a human being was considered to be what? The epitome of a human being. Now, I grew up in a society that still has a vestiges of colonialism left over. So there was some form of colorism, that there was the perception that if you were light-skinned, you were better and had a higher socioeconomic status as opposed to being dark-skinned. And then, so they had to change that and made it just class prejudice, because then there were dark-skinned people who were rich and wealthy and so on. So the whole thing had to be turned upside down. So now it was just class prejudice. So I come from a society where there is entrenched classism, meaning that the rich, the more wealth you have, the more status and power and influence you have, and therefore you are perceived to be a greater human being than someone who does not have wealth. So that's my background. So here I come into this society, and people are still judging people based on color. People are still judging people based on the appearance of their skin. And I'm looking at this landscape, and I'm like, and you wonder why there is a problem in America. So here's my perception. So I'm sitting at this committee, and I'm looking at all these people, and I said, everybody in here is about to retire except for me and two others. And I said, the two others who are my age, or one of them is younger than I am, they're bulldogging and bullying even a woman who is white, even the younger white woman, from even being a part of the committee, because they want to hold on to an America that does not exist anymore. And I wanted to state that, because it was important for us to understand that, and it was important to realize this. In other words, as I looked at them, I said, it's almost as if there's a circle being drawn around them, and they can't see. It's like when Paul Revere said the British are coming, all you could hear was the stampede of the horses' hooves, but you couldn't see them, but you knew they were coming. These people are sitting there like a sitting time bomb in an America that no longer exists, while the lines of the society are being redrawn right around them, and they're just being circled. I'm like, it's almost as if they live in another world. They live in another world, and they have no idea what exists out of their world. Because believe me, the amount of time that I spend interacting with people from all backgrounds, white, black, yellow, green, and red, they have not a clue what's going on. You've heard me talk about my Calcutta being in the middle of Detroit. I guarantee you, your first impression was that there are only blacks there. Are you kidding me? We have about 30 white folks come in every week. I know their faces. Can you dig it? So if these people who were sitting at my committee meeting yesterday had seen this, they would have been prompted to action. Do you see what I'm talking about? Because now they would see what I see, that the society they live in is crumbling. It's changing. The lines are being redrawn. So let me provide you with the background. So that's the background. That's the perspective from which I come. So let me tell you what colorism is, as defined by Wikipedia, the online encyclopedia. It says, colorism is discrimination based on skin color, a form of prejudice or discrimination in which human beings are treated based on the social meanings attached to skin color. Social meanings attached to skin color. Now, in America, where this problem exists, and in Southeast Asia and so on, where this problem exists is that there is a social meaning attached to skin color. In America, if you're dark skinned, if you're ethnic, or if you're brown skinned, you are perceived as being less than. You're perceived as being insignificant and unimportant. You see Plato right now, where there's a black president in the White House who happens to be biracial. His mother is white, his daughter is black, and he's treated badly by the established political hierarchy simply because of his skin color, and they have a history behind them of treating black people as if they're subhuman. So now they don't know what to do with a black man sitting in the White House, and they hate everybody else who voted for him, so they're making it as hard as possible. And while at the same time they're doing that, they're not realizing that the world in which they live is what? Crumbling. That world no longer exists. It's disappearing. It's like it's going down into a hole. And there are new lines of color that are being redrawn around them, and they can't see it. I don't know if they're well-traveled. I don't know if they've been to other parts of the world. But surely, if they've been to other parts of the world, they would see that people are integrated. Now, in certain parts of the world, colorism is very established because the lighter-skinned people are perceived to be richer and better. That's a vestige of colonialism that was left behind. But the truth of the matter is, we're talking about the United States. This is where the change has got to happen. We're concerned about the rest of the world. Of course we are. But this is the United States where I live. And this is the United States where you live. And this is where the change has got to happen. So as long as there are social meanings attached to skin color, there's always going to be some form of what? Colorism and racism. Now, according to Wikipedia, the online encyclopedia, racism is defined as actions, practices, or beliefs to which members of a race share or perceive to share a set of characteristics or traits or abilities or qualities, such as personality, intellect, morality, or other cultural behavioral characteristics. Are you following me? That's what racism is. Racism is entrenched colorism. Because within racism, there is an ascribed set of beliefs attached to people of a certain race. So back in the South, in the old days, white people believed that black people were worthless and were inhuman and didn't have any intellect. And they could entertain you. Hi. Yeah, they could entertain you, and they had personality, and they had a certain culture, and they had a certain ability, and they could be great athletes. But that was the extent of their contribution to the human race. White people were acted or were told that they were the leaders, and they're supposed to lead everyone else, and they're smarter and brighter and better because they were white. That's racism. If I'm going to tell my children that you are better because you're black, or you're better because you're white, or you're half white, or you're yellow, or red, or whatever, that's racism. Are we clear now? I think I've made it clear. And so what you find is that people now are people over time now, as people go to college more and more, and they're integrating more and more because now there are more colored people sitting beside them, they're integrating and talking to other people and finding that, wait a minute, there's not a whole lot of difference between you and I as my parents raised me to believe, that we look like we have a lot of similarities, more based on socioeconomic background than based on color. Do you see what I'm talking about? So my daughter tells me all the time, because before she went off to college, I told her she was going to meet a lot of different people from a lot of different backgrounds, and you're going to be amazed. And she said her white friends are constantly amazed at the similarities in their background, rather than, and they would had they not gone to college and met others, they would never have known, because they grew up in strictly insulated environments where their parents still tell them that being white is better. I am not telling black people to go and tell your kids that being black is better, but I'm telling white people, you need to stop that. You need to stop telling your kids that being white is better. You need to start telling your kids that they ought to treat each human being with a certain modicum of decency that is attributable to the fact that they are human. That's all. People are people are people. People are human beings. It doesn't matter. Until someone starts, you know, creating a mass shooting incident and start hating on other people and treating people badly, then you have other terms to describe them. But you have to start. You have to stop the madness. It's crazy. And you've got to understand that the world has changed. I don't know how many of you have gone overseas, and perhaps for me, the uniqueness that I provide is based on my international perspective, because I've lived in another country. I've interacted with many people from many different lands, with many ethnicities and a wide variety of cultural engagements. And so because of that, I have a broad view of the world. And I can tell you right now from where I stand and where I'm sitting that the view that most white Americans have of themselves in the world needs to be revisited, because the world has changed. That view of white power and white supremacy is over. That's still 50 years ago. The world is no longer like that. If anything, the world is advancing to a lighter skin environment, but not one that is based solely on being white, simply because of what it brings. And if you don't prepare your children to live in that world, they are going to be what? They're going to be sad, because they're going to work in an environment where a brown-skinned guy is in charge, or a brown-skinned guy owns a company, or a black guy is running things, and they're going to have a problem. They're going to come back home and be sad because they could not fit into the world that you had created for them, and then they're going to become marginalized, polarized, and then they dissociate themselves from the society, and before you know it, they become a mass shooter. Hello. That's the psychology. Why? Because that's the environment, the mental environment in which you're creating their mind. When you start telling your children that the color of their skin is what makes them a better human being than the next person, you are, in fact, damaging your children. You're not doing a good job of preparing them to meet the demands of the world. In 50 years, America will not be white. America will be brown. It will be a collage of colors. Matter of fact, if you're white, they'll probably look at you crazy, and if you're very black, they'll look at you crazy, because that would be too extreme. Everybody is going to be brown. That's the world. That's where the world is trending. White people are secure in Europe, and they're not coming here anymore. And further, other nations from the southern parts of the world are moving into Europe, and the whole world is trending to be brown. That's how the world is going to look. We're all going to look like one. We're not going to look vastly different. There have been some mutations that will stick, like blue eyes, green eyes, and amber-colored eyes, like I have. My eyes are amber-colored. And so those are going to stay. But you've got to see what we're talking about. And I find that in a lot of cases, most people are very excited, very, 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 very uncomfortable. It doesn't matter your level of discomfort. Your level of discomfort is not going to affect the fact that this world has changed, and unless you rise up and change, it's not going to happen for you. In my household, I prepare my children for this world, this new world that I envision, that I see where it's going. I tell them to make the best of every opportunity. I tell them that they're great human beings, and they're great human beings and better human beings simply because they're compassionate and caring about others. I tell my children that it doesn't matter what the color of another person's skin, they're to evaluate each person based on how they treat you. But never judge them simply because they're that or dismiss them. No. I've raised my children to respect others and to respect themselves. And if they carry themselves in such a way where they respect themselves and respect others, then people will respect them too. When I go out into the community, I respect myself. I expect the community to respect me because I respect myself and I respect the members of the community. And so I'm teaching the community how to respond to me as much as I respond to the community. And so we've got to create and cultivate that kind of environment. Do you see where I'm coming from? If you, in other words, with this committee that I sit on, if I want the change to take place, I'm going to have to be the arbiter of change. So I have to be the one who says, you can't marginalize and be exclusive. You've got to be inclusive. That's the first step. That is pointing the finger back at them and turning the finger back at them. And maybe they were, you know, justified. Who does she think she is? Well, that's their problem, not mine. Because if they don't prepare themselves, then their children and their children already see a different world. It's shifted onto their feet because the world their children grew up in has changed dramatically in the last 30 years from how they were raised to believe that they would always be on top, they would always be in charge, and every opportunity would come to them just because they're white. Their children have seen a different world now. And so their grandchildren now know exactly what they're dealing with because they go to school and the person sitting over here to the right and to the left and behind and in front is different from how they look. Whoa. What kind of world are you prepping your children to live in? Colorism. Judging someone based on the social meanings attached to their skin color. Unbelievable. And racism are those sets of characteristics that we ascribe to people from a particular race. It's like we believe racism is also expressed in believing that all Asians are computer geniuses. So you meet an Asian, a Chinese or an Oriental, a person from, you know, from who has Oriental features, and the first thing you assume is that they're computer geniuses and they're engineers. Whoa, those people hate that. And then the other kind of racism that I have encountered and I have seen played out is assuming that every dark-skinned Indian person or is a doctor or a neurosurgeon or so on. Whoa, that's another one. that's racism. That's an assumption. Sometimes people are just ordinary people. They don't have to be a doctor. You know, they're just ordinary people, just want to live their lives out. It's like in some of those communities, the children want to go to school to be a journalist or to be a psychologist or to be a lawyer, and the parents are like, no, you have to be a doctor. Oh, my God. And they're like, I don't want to study medicine for 13 years or 15 years and come out of college at 32 when I'm done socially inept. And by the time they're finished studying, they're in their 50s, early, you know, late 40s, in their 40s with gray hair, and it seems like they've lost most of their life. That's what my youngest daughter told me the other day. She said, that is why when we go to the doctors always have gray hairs, Mom, and because they spend time, most of their life studying, and by the time they were finished and started working, they were getting old. And that was, like, interesting perspective. I never thought of that. And she's like, I've got to get moving because I don't want to be 30 and just coming out of college and just finishing college and finishing my residency, and by that time I will be old. I wouldn't have married or had children. She says, whoa, life is starting a little late. Anna, my 11-year-old, wow, she thinks far. But do you see what I mean? So we've got to change. And here's what's going to happen. Many people are still holding on to their entrenched perspectives on colorism and racism. And notice here that I haven't addressed colorism from the Black American perspective, which is light skin, medium brown, or brown skin, or dark skin. I haven't addressed it from that perspective. Although the perception exists within the Black community that for you to be successful in this society, you have to project being a light-skinned person. So if you notice most entertainers over time have evolved into light colorness as opposed to when they first began, how dark they were, it's because they felt as if that the lighter hue they are, the more projects will come their way. That you can't fault anybody. That's their perception. That's what they believe. And perhaps it has been their experience. So they live it out. So I haven't addressed it from that perspective. I'm looking at it from the point of view that many white people today of a certain generation still believe that all the power and all the opportunity needs to be deposited and contained by them. And so they look at other people and they judge people and assess people's social status with meanings attached to people's skin color. Not only is that wrong, in today's world, it's downright silly. Because now we all know you can never say it, everybody. Judge a book by its cover. Can't judge a book by its cover. You look at someone and say, oh, well, they look like that. They're from there. They don't know much. And then I open my mouth and you learn that I used to speak Spanish, that I learned German in college. Didn't know that. And that, yes, when we first went to high school in our first semester, we were exposed to Latin. Didn't know that. Now, when I went to high school, there were many people of many different colors. They have had the same set of experiences as I have had. If you were to see them, are you going to judge them based on the color of their skin, that perhaps they haven't had the same level of exposure that you might have had? Wrong. That's how I know that this world is changing, that the world has changed and is going to change into becoming where all of us will look the same, where more people will look alike. So you won't be able to distinguish people as solely coming from China anymore with slant eyes and a certain feature. Everybody is going to look like we all have those eyes and we all have the same color. So we're just going to be people. And I tell you this, the extremely rich already know this. How do they know? Because they're well-traveled. They're well-traveled. They've been all over the world. And they have seen who has the money. And the people who have the money are kings and queens from Africa who own oil wells and have their dynasties of owning minerals and mining it. Are people from Asia who own large hotel chains and so on and own technology, and black and brown people from India who own lots of manufacturing, which is something America needs to take note of. India is now associated with manufacturing, go figure. And whites, a smattering of whites from all over the place. Do you see what I mean? So extremely rich people already know that the world has changed. So as you and I down here are fighting for the scraps, how is that? I'm thinking. This is the Harry Cameron Show. It's Work It Wednesday. Better have an entire state of mind, as Jay-Z says. This is the Harry Cameron Show. We'll be right back.
Tribeca, right next to the narrow, but I'll be hood forever. I'm the new Sinatra, and since I made it here, I can make it anywhere. Yeah, they love me everywhere. I used to cop in Harlem, all of my Dominicanos right there up on Broadway. Pull me back to that McDonald's, took it to my stash spot, 560 State Street. Catch me in the kitchen like a Simmons whipping pastry. Cruising down A Street, off white Lexus, driving so slow, but BK is from Texas. bitches. Me, I'm out that Bed-Stuy, home of that boy Biggie. Now I live on Billboard, and I brought my boys with me. Say what up to Tata, still sipping my ties. Sitting courtside, Knicks and Nets give me high five. I'll be spiked out, I could trip a referee. Tell by my attitude that I'm most definitely from.
Continue to enjoy the music, and as usual, make sure that you say a prayer for good friends in Toronto who have had a tragedy this morning in Ottawa, Ontario, just outside of Toronto. And make sure you say a prayer for friends who have been impacted, not only those on the bus, but those who are riding the train. Thank you so much, everybody. Have a great Wednesday and continue to work. It is something going to be over real soon. Thanks so much, everybody.